A big hello to all our listeners. This episode is going to be very different from our usual routine. We are not going to, talk about business and finance because, let's face it, nobody else is talking about it at this stage. even when the US is launching airstrikes on Iran and Iran is sending missiles towards American bases in Iraq, still in India, nobody's talking about it. So that pretty much summed it up for us that, maybe it's time for us to at least once talk about the quote-unquote elephant in the room. I mean, I think in the Indian context, when you say elephant in the room, it kind of, I'm not sure whether that's politically correct to start with, but anyways, lots of elephants here, but this one is the biggest one. So the main thing that we're going to talk about today is the ongoing sense of disillusionment, anger that, we have recently been seeing, at least in major Indian cities, in Indian academia. We often hear our friends talk about it, and we at Transfin have always, proactively tried to avoid political narratives, but that's kind of an editorial stance we have taken. But we felt that maybe we should at least give our sense of what's going on. So and what is the role played by the new technological and news narrative in reinforcing what's going on? So yeah, for a change today, we are going to get a bit political. So hopefully we don't, we'll still be able to have an objective and thoughtful discussion on these issues. We consider ourselves, I think, to be fairly rational people, but I think that's the first sign of being biased also. So, hopefully me and Sharath would be able to steer this discussion ahead in the most holistic fashion possible. So with that behind us, welcome to the show and hope you enjoy it. Hey, Sharath, how's it going, man?
It's good. Very different today.
Yes,
it is. Are we going to talk about something very different?
That's correct. I mean, it's a kind of we have a guest coming up hopefully next week.
Yeah.
And we had a very interesting guest last week. So this obviously is going to be just me and you. But I think it was, wasn't it like 3-4 days back when I suddenly came up to you and I was like, yeah, man, let's talk about CA, NRC, JNU and all that. I mean, I was just getting a bit, overwhelmed by all the sentiment that's coming in.
Yeah, which we do on a regular basis anyway, but for the first time with a mic in between.
Yes, that's correct. And it kind of, I think, ties up well with what Simi and Sudhan were discussed in the last episode of Adda, right? They spoke about how the news and information ecosystem has changed in the realm of technology.
Yeah.
And how millennials have stopped reading newspapers and everything is about WhatsApp, university and
Instagram and videos.
And I think that also has a major role to play in the ongoing political discourse in our country. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, it's not India specific. I think it's world specific that the quality of news is being questioned.
Right.
And both sides, there is no bias. I mean, people like to divide camps into two, right and left. Like, forget that. I mean, I don't care about that. But the point is that no one knows what to believe now.
Right.
There is obviously a space, I think, in the news ecosystem, which it's heavily challenged. Of course, it's moving away from more research and R&D heavy towards quick, instant gratifying videos or images or memes or GIFs, right?
And I guess anyone can do it now.
Right? Anyone can do it. So I don't even know what to believe and what not to believe, right? Like
right.
Everything has a counterpoint now.
Yeah.
Like facts have sort of taken the back seat, I feel.
Funny how social media has evolved, right? Because I remember when social media, I consider social media to have arrived when Facebook became what it became, right?
So yeah.
That was in, I think 2007, 2008, 2009, that was the time when I think I got acquainted with Facebook.
Yeah, likewise.
The first
yeah.
at scale social media platform. Before that, we used to have Orkut.
And High Five.
And High Five, yeah. And I remember when Facebook came in, like in the beginning, it was about, it's so easy to like mobilize and organize a party.
Yeah.
And, it's so easy to connect with each other. And it had a very kind of, positive, we are all one planet and one species. So, we might as well have like a plug and play mode of communication.
Mm.
But unfortunately, it has evolved into something, into a tool for misinformation, right?
Mm.
And that sometimes, I'm sure Mr. Zuckerberg must be, I don't know whether that was something that he anticipated, but now he's too big to fail. So
yeah.
Obviously, he's going to be like, no,
yeah.
I still feel it's a force for good.
Yeah. He is too big to fail.
Yeah.
Reminds me of back in the day when Standard Oil was too big to fail.
Yeah.
And they had to break it down. I think you need these American tech companies will go through that now.
Yeah,
they've
possibly
become too big because they're monopolizing everything. Advertising dollars, news, e-commerce. Like, I mean, they're different companies, but I think they are getting there.
Yeah, and it's all UGC. Like, actually, professionally generated content has taken a backseat. And I mean, I think you were telling me, right, about News and Shorts. I think they came up with a UGC video product now.
Yeah, I think they've come up with a UGC instant short video product on the news ecosystem side. So I've yet to do a deep dive, but yes, they have.
But it sounds pretty much like anyone with a phone can now post a clip.
Yeah.
And kind of on a news website or a news platform.
Yeah.
So
I don't know what the problem for me is that I don't know how the quality checks are in place there.
Yeah.
I mean, tomorrow I can film two guys shooting.
Yeah.
Fighting rather. Sorry, I can shoot two guys fighting.
Mm.
I can easily paint a narrative where it can be scripted.
Yeah.
Like, who's putting in those quality checks, right?
Right.
I mean, just for the sake of example, I can put two guys. One is from a JNU student. One is an ABVP student.
Who might be from JNU as well.
Might be. And I can have them, I can paint whatever picture I want. You know, it's like that. I mean, there's no bias. I'm not saying that A versus B, but you can pretty much dictate.
But how is it different from like a TikTok in your view? Is it?
I don't know if TikTok is positioning itself as news.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, right? That as a platform now, you're putting yourself on the line.
Yeah.
That you're actually, I mean, like if you look at InShots, I mean, it's an aggregation play, but I don't think user no longer differentiates between an aggregator and a publisher, right? I mean, I've seen a lot of people who say, oh, I read this on Facebook, I read this on WhatsApp, but it might be an article from Bloomberg or an FT.
Yeah.
So publishers have already taken a backseat in terms of their visibility to the end user. It's the platform which is like a person won't differentiate between, it'll be like, okay, it's on Facebook, so it must be true.
Yeah, right? People don't even, a lot of people don't know what, at the end of the day, these guys, Facebook and Twitter, whatnot, are just distribution platforms, right?
Right.
I mean, there can be content being distributed from an NDTV or from a Swaraj or from a Wall Street Journal. Who, like, that is taking the backseat, like you're saying, right?
Right.
People are just like, oh, I saw this on Twitter. But it, like, yeah.
It's like the question is who tweeted it?
Yeah.
What like are that person's credentials or, you know, that kind of gets lost in translation very quickly.
Yeah. Like, it's like saying back in the day, I mean, like, oh, I heard Indian GDP fellow, where did you see that? Oh no, this guy comes in the morning and he tells me, oh, who's the guy? Oh, he throws the newspaper at my balcony.
Right.
Yeah, but he's not saying it.
Yeah.
He's just a distributor.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
newspaper is the product, right?
Right.
People are forgetting that. People are looking at the newspaper delivery guy who throws the bicycle in the morning and throws it at your balcony. People are thinking of that as the source of news.
I mean, interestingly, you know, when the US airstrikes happened, someone I know shared a video of saying that, yeah, this, like on WhatsApp, it was a forwarded video. It had a forwarded tag on top saying that, oh, this is actually the actual footage of General Soleimani's airstrike. And you know, when I saw it, it was like, you know like a typical drone footage. So black and white. And you had like a convoy of vehicles and they get hit one after the other. And I was like, okay, wow, how is this out? Like, how is this out for public consumption, right? And I went, Googled it, and immediately, like, there was some fact-checking website. I think it was India Today or something. I mean, India Today now has a fact-checking, I think, team. And they came out with, oh, this is a fake video. It's a video from a video game or something like that. And then I realized that, like, the person who sent it to me, I mean, I kind of immediately, you know, messaged him back saying that, look, this is a fake video, right? So just don't forward it to other people.
Yeah.
But a lot of people will just do that, right? I mean, they'll just forward it. They won't verify. And it's not because of any malintention. Yeah. They just assume that, yeah, if it's on a WhatsApp and if it has come from someone they trust, it's true.
Yeah.
Right. Which is where I think the biggest problem here has come out to me, right?
And earlier I was sort of naive. I used to sort of discuss with my parents and that generation, my grandparents, and I used to say them, don't believe everything you see on WhatsApp and things like that, right? I used to do a check. But over times, even I've been guilty where I've believed something because the quality of fake news is so high now.
Yeah.
Like, they know, you know, people say, like, if you say something ludicrous, then you can, you know, that's the first signal.
Right.
But if it seems believable and you photoshopped and you put some images, then you don't even know what you, and you're, over years, this can directionally paint your narrative on things, right?
Right.
So it becomes an echo chamber, surely. And it's very difficult.
Do you put any checks on yourself in order to, you know,
I don't forward anything until I am fairly convinced in my head that it's genuine, and for that I'll do some googling around. I mean, if it's a joke, then it's fine, I'll do it, there's no harm. But if it's anything which is sort of directing towards any kind of political narrative, then I would not. I highly question the ruling government, and I'm opposed to their initiatives in a lot of things,
right.
And so if it's bashing them or supporting them, I generally don't push anything out. But yeah, that's sort of in-house check. But I don't think my check is 100% efficient, because you will find two competing images,
yeah,
one with this, and both parties claim that their version is true. How do you believe? Like, you know, at some point of time, you have to take a call, I guess.
Or you just like stop forwarding.
You stop forwarding, I guess, yeah.
Well, I mean, let's come a bit to what we were planning to talk about today. So in terms of like the current, I would say, student unrest, youth unrest, you know, especially in big cities. I mean, we are in Delhi, so we are getting like a front row seat to it. And I mean, a lot of things, I think, are kind of, you know, for me, there are not that many students of history,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that there are not many people who actually look at things from a very historical perspective. And I think that also is a major problem at this stage, in the sense that if you have to analyze what's going on in like Jawaharlal Nehru University, you know, what happened at Jamia, and what happened before that when the CA and NRC came, there seems to be a thread, right, which is linking and tying each other up. And I think that thread goes as back as Section 370,
yeah,
right, or Ayodhya, which came in when the new political dispensation came into power. And what were your thoughts, you know, when, say, Citizenship Amendment Act came out? What was your immediate feeling?
My immediate feeling was, and I remember I told you that, man, there's a lot of things happening. I actually went to the website, downloaded it, printed it out, and took it home, and I thought I'll read every line.
So you looked like the official version in the Gazette.
Yeah.
Right.
And obviously it references to the earlier amendment, which is much more. So I, you know, obviously I didn't spend like hours and hours of it. I did a skim through it. Obviously, for me, it's loud and clear that there is one underlying principle that it speaks out, which I'm not comfortable with.
Hmm.
There are a lot of pluses in that, but the one negative is so negative that overall, I think it's, I'm not going to sign up for that.
Right.
Which essentially it says that Muslims are, I mean, that's how I took it, are second level citizens of the country, or are not going to be treated as any other religion. So the very fact that there's an underlying meaning that a religion, in this case Muslims, are second.
Like via filter.
Yeah.
Via religious filter.
Yeah, for me, like that's the very fact that religion defines nationality is not something that I associate myself with, or I don't even think India associates over the years.
Right.
So that for me is a deal breaker. It's somewhat similar to a conversation that I had way back in 4 or 5 years with an American friend. And I was telling him, like, you know, what do you use on Donald Trump? Like, economy is doing fine. There seems to be some kind of measures, and, you know, the trade war seems like he's getting the best out of. He's like, all that is fine. For me, the definition of America growing up was land for everyone.
Yeah,
it was meant, the fabric of the nation was built for where anyone can come and do anything they want. And for me, that's most important. I take my Indian view on this.
Yeah.
For me also, it was like, it doesn't really matter who you worship for me.
Yeah.
The very fact that you've put in a filter on religious ground, that's a deal breaker for me.
Right.
So I get the idea of collecting population data. I'm obviously pro stricter measures to block illegal immigration. It's illegal by definition. Anything illegal is illegal.
Yeah.
So be it immigration, be it drug trafficking, or be it making money, illegal by definition is wrong.
I mean, till the law is in place.
Yeah, the law is in place. Yes, of course. Illegal is illegal, like be it immigration or not. So I get that notion and I get that narrative, but the way the execution of it on a ground which is religious, for me, is stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what it kind of boiled down to, right? I mean, nobody's looking at the CA in isolation.
Yeah.
It cannot be looked at in isolation.
Correct, yeah.
Right? If you look at a community in a country, and I mean, like, say, you and me don't identify a lot with what religion, you know, our families might follow. Or what other. I mean, so for example, like, I look at religion purely as a social construct.
Yeah, you know, likewise. I mean, I'm very agnostic,
right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying that don't do what you do. Do it, fine. I mean, if it makes you happy, why not, right? But obviously, a lot of people do have a very deep sense of identity linked to their religion. I mean, it's part of their you know, day-to-day upbringing, day-to-day existence. And when you kind of, you know, take down a community which is like 15-16% of the entire population of the country and you know, put that filter in the act, that obviously raises red flags immediately. But then when you kind of link it to, you know, something like the NRC, then you kind of think that, okay, there's something really, you know, diabolical which is going on here, right?
Yeah.
And like I remember when NRC was introduced as a quote unquote pilot in Assam, right? I think they missed 1.9 million, 1.8 million people mm-hmm. out of it when the final NRC came out,
mm-hmm.
and obviously included a lot of Muslims, but it also included a sizable number of Hindus and Christians. And then you also saw, you know, former chief minister's family being left out in the NRC. You saw, you know, army veterans which are left out.
Yeah.
Then I was like, okay, let's you know, segregate the ideology out of the equation. Mm. Okay, there's an ideology behind this, mm. why it's happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you start talking about the ideology, then it becomes like a, you know, left versus right, liberal versus non-liberal. Yeah. So let's leave that aside. Let's assume that, you know, you have the full force of the ideology behind this particular initiative, right? Mm. Even after doing that, mm. it was a major failure.
Yeah, right? Execution was one thing that they're proud about.
Yeah.
This time even that has been questioned, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, it was a major failure then, right? And especially in a country which is, I mean, if you kind of once in a while just step back and think about the number of filters we can have in India, I mean, the list is endless, right? Okay, yeah, you can have it on the basis of religion. You can have it on the basis of caste. You can have it on the basis of language. Where does it stop then?
Yeah. Right?
I think that's what kind of, you know, bothers everyone, that why is this even a variable?
Exactly.
In that's the entire equation.
That's
exactly, why can't you just say that, okay, all illegal immigrants are out. That's
it. Or all minorities persecution. Like, there are ways where you can make a more blanketed, non-discriminatory comment, right?
Right.
That sort of, I think you nailed it. Why is it even a variable?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a variable for anything for me.
Yeah.
I don't care about that as a variable for anything. Like,
right.
Daily interaction, sports, jobs, dating life. Like, it's not a variable for anything, right?
Right.
So why is it a variable for any kind of citizenship or Foreigners Act or anything?
To be fair, like, you are giving the thing that it's not a variable for anything
for
applies
me personally.
For us.
Yes, correct.
I mean, there are a lot of people for them. But one is that what you do in your personal life,
like,
you can't actually stop anyone. Okay, you should not, you know, you have to forcibly marry to someone from outside your caste or from outside your religion. That's
you
something which is not enforceable.
Yeah.
Like, by that logic, the caste system has been illegal since eternity in our country. I see it in living rooms on a daily basis. I see very well-educated, so-called quote-unquote liberal people, you know, wear that caste lens. Because when it comes to, I think, and that's a legal point, right? When it comes to personal life, it's the same thing like what happened in Sabarimala, right? In the beginning, I used to be like, oh, what's the problem here, you know? What exactly is the issue? I don't understand. I mean, this is something so ancient. Why is everyone making such a hue and cry about it? And then you told me that, I think you spoke with a lawyer on this issue, and the lawyer was like, no, you have to think of it in a different way.
Yeah.
It's not about, you know, whether it is important or not. It's about whether it's important for a certain set of people.
Yeah.
If it's important for a certain set of people, no matter what law the Supreme Court or the parliament passes, it won't be practiced in real time. You know, people are not going to just follow it.
Yeah.
You can't make them follow it. So I think that's what this entire point on the CA also kind of boils down to. That, okay, irrespective of person's personal views, let's look at how you view your country as a whole, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of identity you think India has? And I think India has a rich tradition of being a syncretic identity, right?
Yeah.
I don't keep any historical baggage. You don't keep any historical baggage. People do keep historical baggage.
Yeah.
Right? But that's what nation building and vision is all about, that you have to leave the historical baggage behind you.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why, like, the constitution is like a forward-looking 100 or 200 year document at the end of the day.
Hmm.
And I think the CA went completely against it.
Yeah.
So,
and it's for, yeah, that's exactly it, right? It sort of dismisses a lot of work that has already been done.
Right.
Another thing that really, that I'm a little bit of government bashing here, but another thing is, like, in terms of prioritization, our immigration reform is sort of the go-to thing today for these guys. I mean, for me, it's like, it seems like a designed to get political mileage rather than sort of get more economic output. I mean, for me, immigration reforms are not the most important thing right now. There are so many other things that need attention.
Yeah.
I mean, that for me is a sense of priority as well, right? I mean, yes, corporate tax cut, fantastic. And I mean, I think business community and general everyone sort of embraced it. I mean, people are mixed about demonetization and GST, but I think GST sort of the intention to centralize taxation is a positive one.
Yeah.
Let's forget about the side effects of it. But this sort of immigration reforms, I don't think even makes it into the top five things that the government should be doing right now. And that also, I'm like, okay, why is this important right now?
I think it was, wasn't this, I think, in the court in the US that economy is not important for elections, right?
which is so bizarre.
Elections are not won on that.
Yeah.
So I think in the current dispensation, there is not a fine line between their electoral machinery and their administration.
Yeah.
Right? They're approaching administration in the same way as elections.
Yeah.
And where I think it's going completely off the radar. And I agree with you. I mean, it won't make it even to my top 10.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, in a country like ours, there are too many other things
exactly.
to be looked at. But maybe that's why they are being done. So that, you know, the underperformance. And I think the underperformance is part due to action.
Yeah.
But it's also part because, like, let's face it, like, even yesterday we had the numbers, right? Like, we're looking at a 4.5% GDP growth.
Yeah.
So there's an economic slowdown.
Correct. Yeah.
And it is part domestic, it is part due macro. To global
Correct.
Macro factors.
Yeah.
And credit cycle is at a kind of a, I won't say trough, but it has slowed down phenomenally.
Yeah.
Right? Now, you know, I know that when it comes to, you know, things like credit and economy, the policy action can only take you so far. It will always take like 3 to 4 to 6 to 8 quarters for things to actually recover.
Yeah.
Right? But markets are not ready to wait for that. Press is not ready to wait for that. Even the common man is not ready to wait for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why don't you just, you know, like have one explosive project after another so that everybody's just, you know, nobody's talking about it anymore. Right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's pretty early in their term. So I don't know for how long, if this strategy works in auto mode for the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure even today, like, people are kind of seeing through it. So it does show a lack of, I would say, you know, clarity.
Experience.
clarity, experience, leadership. You know, there are many ways to put it.
Yeah.
Right? So it does definitely demonstrate that to a certain extent.
Yeah.
But, you know, but if you kind of, the trouble that I have is, you know, and I mean, call me confused, is that on one end, I am unhappy on the policy front. That why is something like this being thrown at people? And by that logic, I sympathize with, you know, people on who are on the suffering end of this.
Yeah.
But on the other end, when this entire, when the protest started happening, you know, first they started happening on the, you know, streets of Delhi, then you had like in Jamia, then you had that entire incident in JNU. I also did not, you know, kind of buy that approach, certainly. I was like, okay, what are we talking here about? Are we talking about CAA, NRC? Are we talking about Article 370? Are we talking about the fee hike in JNU? Are we talking about the internal politics within JNU, right? Between left and right? Very quickly, thanks to, you know, the poor verification mechanisms in mobile phone based technology, very quickly that entire opposite view became muddled for me.
It is. And I think one thing there is that I don't think there is a such level of granularity and discipline in the protests that are going. It's more now against a regime mentality. It's
right.
more, and we cannot have this discussion without sort of bringing an ideology per se.
Right.
I think it's come to a point where they are interlinked. There are some fake links, there are some genuine links,
right.
but people have clubbed them together and taken that as a representation of a larger regime and machinery,
right.
which at its core does believe in some kind of religious based demarcation,
right.
and it's taken that shape.
Yeah.
Now the support and opposition of this is through multiple evidence and fake news and legal, obviously that will go on. But I think you're right that that level of granularity is not there. If you ask me why were they protesting on at this date here, or why were these guys there?
I mean, there are a lot of people with conflicting agendas.
Correct.
And they keep on, like, it seems like a fad. It seems like after 2 to 3 months, you won't remember what has happened, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, I sometimes feel like, I used to live in Jaipur, right? So, you know, have you heard of the Jaipur Lit Fest?
Yeah.
Great place, right?
Yeah.
And you go there, you know, you have, it's kind of a free-for-all, intellectually very rich kind of an event. You have, you know, speakers from all over the world. And now it is exploded, right? Now you have hundreds and thousands of people showing up. But when you kind of, you know, go there are two types of people there. People who are seriously present there to listen into the talks and to, you know, kind of just take in all the, you know, knowledge and insights which is coming their way. And then there are, you know, those kind of pastry kind of people who are like, oh, this is the gig in the town. So we have to show up.
Yeah.
We should be there to show our face.
Yeah.
And I sometimes feel that the protest also has, you know, two sides to it. I mean, I feel that there are obviously, you know, like guys who are genuinely there and who care, who are doing what they're doing for a reason. They have a strong conviction about it.
Yeah.
I mean, the unfortunate thing is that in our country right now, with the current government taking the bastion of Hindu nationalism and right-wing politics, the bastion of left-wing politics, right, de facto goes on to the opposition, who also throughout their long tenure of governance has probably broken every rule in the book.
Yeah.
Right? And it just de facto goes there. I don't think there is any economically right and socially left political voice in our country.
I'd be the first person to vote for a regime like that.
Yeah.
Which gives me, which is economically right and politically left, unfortunately.
Some people say it's not possible. I disagree with that, though.
Yeah, I disagree as well. Yeah. I think there is some central ground.
Yeah.
We don't have it. I think that we have extreme left and extreme right. And even, I mean, those guys who don't consider themselves extreme left, their policies are extremely left. Delhi government is one example. Good work. I mean, not undermining the work that has been done, but I don't think long-term economically left views work.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's an economic argument. You're right.
I mean, even the current power dispensation, I mean, if you look at, I mean, they kind of came on a mandate of, yeah, we are economically right and we are socially centrist. That's how they kind of came into power, I think, for the first time.
Yeah.
Very quickly, it came out that, okay, no, you're actually economically left. You're not that right. I mean, you kind of follow a statist approach. And socially, you're not like centrist. You're actually socially quite right.
You're quite right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that kind of equation fell out.
Yeah.
And then, but on the other end, also, you don't have anyone who has a great claim to fame. And I'm pretty sure that they were in power for much longer time than these guys.
Yeah.
So they were doing these things with a much more expert handle, you know, in terms of just co-opting the quote-unquote, like, I always see left-wing intellectuals are always better at what they do than right-wing intellectuals, especially in our country. So I feel they often were able to do this with a much more craft, with a much more finesse, right? And they've broken every rule in the book. So, but what I feel is that, say there is a genuine guy who is protesting, and say someone from the opposition shows up next to that person, I think that entire protest gets diluted overnight.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel that entire thing gets lost in translation very quickly, for me, personally. Mm-hmm. And that's where I kind of had those mixed feelings, you know, immediately as that started.
Yeah. For me, like, when there is someone in power and there's so many tools at their disposal, right? Control over the police, control over the internet, control over even Twitter India now, I feel. There is so much control that there is in terms of dictating narratives.
Yeah.
How do you counter that? Back in the day, you would have thought law and order, you would have thought Supreme Court, you would have thought High Court. But now, people who are sort of campaigning for it, they feel like, okay, those tools have all gone now.
Mm.
That we don't have those tools have gone from our hands. There was that neutrality associated with a lot of these things, which people now think is no longer neutral. Maybe they were wrong to begin with in the first place. They were never neutral. Who knows? But now people think that we're losing tools. We trusted High Court, Supreme Court, maybe whatever. They're losing faith in a lot of legal channels, I feel. Mm-hmm. So they think, okay, so what else is there? And they sort of default into a protest mode.
Yeah. They're
like, okay, that's the only way there because, I mean, I do it on social media, do it offline, offline and online. It's a twofold thing. I see protestants online and then there's offline, right? I feel that's the thing, but you're right. I mean, you'll never find 100% efficiency in any kind of operation or movement or whatever, right? There'll obviously be some dead weight there. I'm sure there'll be some opposite dead weight. If there's a pro-CA and anti-CA rally, I'm sure there'll be mix and match. There'll be some of these guys here, some of those guys there,
who
are just there to dilute the entire value proposition. That is human mentality, I guess.
Right. I mean, in terms of, if you're in power, I mean, nobody's going to talk about the opposition if you're in power.
Yeah.
People talk about the person in power.
Sure, right? Absolutely. Even we do a lot of incumbent bashing, right? I mean, in terms of economy.
Yeah.
But
I mean, if you're in power, you have to be ready for facing.
You have to, I agree,
that.
Yeah.
So, I think the flakiness on that end is obviously quite disturbing, right? You can call it flakiness, you can call it, you know, I don't know, you can call it being very touchy, being very overtly sensitive about, you know, you have to take criticism if you're in power. I mean, that kind of is period, right?
I agree. Right?
Whether the institutional framework of the country has weakened and everything is biased, I don't buy that to a great extent.
Hmm.
I do think that institutions in India are not that weak that, you know, a government, you know, which kind of comes into one or two terms can, you know, make it vanish overnight. The fact remains that at the moment, like even if you look at electorally, I mean, the fact remains that people vote very different at a state level and they vote very different at a central level.
Yeah.
And you can already see that, you know, that the checks and balances in place coming there, right? Last one or two elections kind of demonstrated that, right? That, okay, yeah, if you're winning too much at the center, like the party which won by an outright majority, even by the post system, then lost two elections at the state level. Right? So that automatically shows that, you know, there are automatic checks and balances in place. When it comes to like the judiciary, when it comes to the press, I don't have that kind of a apocalyptic view on it.
Yeah.
I never thought they were phenomenally
good.
I don't think they're like over hitting home runs yeah, on day one.
Yeah.
I still think that once in a while they do hit a home run. Like if you agree with them, you think that they're hitting a home run. Yeah. If you disagree with them, they don't hit a home run. Like, you know, I mean, I often see a lot of liberals getting very happy when the triple talak thing came out. Then a lot of people who had like a slightly more, I would say anti-government view was like, oh, maybe why just triple talak? Why don't you reform things which are off in the Hindu personal law, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's always a way to counter.
Punch holes, yeah.
Right, to punch holes. So, yeah. I don't kind of too dejected on that front.
Yeah.
Right? But that being said, I think in the current entire discussion, right, when it comes to protests, if you look at what I don't like is the point that you raised about lack of focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's not really coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And also then that entire thing gets reinforced by that trigger happy journalism and news flow which is coming out.
Yeah.
For example, like when the entire JNU thing happened, the first ABVP students beat up JNU students. And I was like, okay, who are these guys? Then you see that, okay, a few of those ABVP students are actually JNU students themselves. Then you're like, okay, there's some internal left versus right, clash, which is already going on. And then if you look at the internal JNU politics where, the vice chancellor, I think, has been kind of been accused of being slightly pro-power dispensation or whatever, right?
Like,
I think now they want him out, right? Yeah. So I think the narrative is that the BJP wants to control JNU. So they're putting someone pro-BJP as a vice chancellor. Mm. That is not working internally. So there's already the left versus right internal clash, which now got colluded further with Section 370, with Ayodhya, with CAA and NRC, right?
Yeah.
And by that time, the movie has stretched too long for me. So I'm like, okay, fine, do what you have to do.
Yeah.
Right.
I know what you're saying, and I'm also an optimist like that. I mean, I have some faith in sort of the judicial systems, but when you speak to a lot of people, I've seen very intelligent, well-read, intellectual friends, some right, some left, irrespective. They have, everyone wants the same thing, better world for everyone kind. A lot of people have lost sort of, they're like, you know what the thing is, if I want to tweet something really bad saying fact-based, I'm scared to even do it. Like, I don't even know who'll protect me, because I could be troubled.
But is it like, you think this is a function of age? Do you think for instance, in our life, this probably is happening for the first time?
Yeah.
Right?
I think the younger generation, there was a really nice piece by Harsha Bogle.
I've heard about that.
Yeah, that was a really nice piece. He was talking about how this younger generation is sort of way more confident.
Right.
And it's happening. They're sort of not of the view that it'll change automatically or we'll be fine, we'll find a way.
Right.
They're sort of more of the view of changing things around.
Mm.
They're more proactive like that. So but I do think that age and sort of the new India, sort of the, like, even we're also fairly young, but the younger ones are sort of coming into an age group where I don't think they feel second to anyone. I remember back in the day, late 80s, late 90s, there was that sort of feel, I don't know, no one used to talk about it, but there was that feel that the West is superior, we're inferior. Now I think these guys think we're just at power. Sure, we're behind on the economic trajectory,
right,
but in terms of skill set, in terms of anything, ability, I think we're up there.
But when I was alluding to age, I was also referring to, like, have you ever spoken to, like, say, someone who was born in like 60s who's pro BJP, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you talk to them and you talk about, oh my god, like, if you talk about your outrage, they will be like, oh yeah, in emergency it was much worse.
I feel
that there's a generation of people
who are
seeing this for the first time.
So that
surprise or outrage, and I mean obviously, like, reading about something in history is very different from living through it. So obviously, do you see that also play a bit of a role? That, one thinks that, one kind of lives in the present, right?
Yeah.
One thinks that, like, I was reading this, have you read this book, Factfulness? I mean, it's completely unrelated to this.
I keep seeing, but I haven't read it.
Yeah, so in Factfulness, I mean, the main argument that they're trying to make is that if you look at data, the world is much safer than it used to be earlier.
Mm-hmm.
People are living longer. Politically, things are more stable. That's the broad argument that they are putting, right? Mm-hmm. And then they throw tons of data to kind of, back that. But if you read that, you feel, okay, it's nice. But then if you open your Twitter feed, or if you read the news, if you see what's out there, it's a completely opposite. People are more worried right now. I mean, then I kind of sometimes wonder that it's also a factor of, which era one is born in. For example, like in a parent's generation, getting married at 22 and having 3 kids by the time you're 26, 27, I think people used to just do it with a breeze because that was like, fine. At this stage, it will become a big thing, right? So it's also a factor of change sensibilities.
Yeah.
and, you know, change expectations from the world around you.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and the world is safer, but people are like, oh no, I want it much safer than it is even right now.
Yeah. And inward looking thinking, what I want, I am central to everything else. Everyone else comes secondary.
Yeah.
That sort of, yes, I think it's a very modern day mindset.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, it's pretty funny, like, is, you know, like, for instance, when you look at small things like safety or, you know, I don't know, like taking risks, or when I hear stories from our parents' generations, I mean, their base level of risk appetite was very different from what we have.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, what they will say at that time, and then we'll be like, oh, okay, that's not even acceptable in 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that also has a kind of factor to play.
Yeah.
But you tell me one thing. Okay, there's so much unhappiness and cynicism about this, right? How the hell did these guys come back with such a thumping number?
Who?
The BJP. Who are those people then?
Yeah, I think there's a big, that's the thing. I mean, there's a big set of people who sort of bought into a narrative which is not being delivered. I also think there's a massive shift in the
last... Is there urban-rural divide also, you think?
I definitely think there's an urban-rural divide. But I also think there is a lot of... I actually think whoever in India, I mean, this might be completely baseless. I think whoever can use... who has better bankroll and can use that to sell narratives to an India where people buy whatever is told to them wins. So if you can sell, we are safe with the BJP government or the incumbent government, but we're unsafe with Y.
Yeah.
We are, you know, there. If you paint that narrative, whoever can paint that narrative quicker wins, I think.
I doubt if that will work in a more... I know what you're talking about, you know, when it comes to like the entire... Pulwama aftermath and national security, and that all came out, then these guys won, and then suddenly you're seeing reports on how the, you know, development schemes actually were working very well in the poorest districts because voting patterns actually are very different there, and then you see that, okay, I mean, I think it's not binary from that perspective, I often feel that you know, especially people who, like, you know, we talk about privilege a lot.
Yeah.
Right? We talk about privilege a lot personally.
Yeah. I think,
right?
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, you're privileged. I'm privileged.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? A person who's not privileged, this again is something very low on their
agenda. Yeah.
Right? I mean, it does matter if the road in front of their house got built.
Sure.
Right? So I sometimes think that obviously that entire state-driven development agenda probably did affect people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at like the first, I mean, I kind of get a counter that, okay, no, this is the first past the post system. So you only had like 38% of votes.
Sure, but that's...
But I mean, that's for everyone,
that's
right?
For everyone, I don't buy that. Yeah,
I mean, it's the same thing about electoral college in the US. I mean, that's the system, right?
I agree, yeah.
So, but there are still, I mean, if you look at, but there were 38% of around 900 million voters.
Yeah.
Roughly like 300 plus million people who did vote for one faction.
Yeah.
The rest everyone were divided across.
Yeah.
So there must be something going right also, right? I mean, I'm just trying to be a devil's
advocate. Pun intended.
Pun intended, right? There's something going right on the right.
Yeah, no, exactly. Listen, the few things that I've been very happy with. Corporate tax rate cut was for me one of the nicest things that I've seen because it's bold and it was long due. There is some economic interest, activities of economic interest that have been pushed. So there are some positives on that front for sure. There's some massive negatives as well. I also think to your point of that 38% and sort of how, you know, is that, I mean, we talk about it all the time. That who's a notable opposition? I mean, there is no one to compete, challenge even. I mean, that's the thing, right?
I mean, by the way, like, I voted in South Delhi and it's Meenakshi Lekhi. I think she won by a fairly thumping number. A lot of the guys who are doing protests right now are from South Delhi.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, so I completely agree with you, right? When it comes to actually sitting in the vote booth and voting, then you think, okay, mom, should I vote for the other guy? I don't know. Right? I mean, okay. You know, you kind of take that very wide judgment call at that time, which might be totally against your, you know, basic, I would say, internal sentiment.
Yeah. I know. Also, like, I feel like these protests are not necessarily anti a ruling party. They're more anti faith that you had in certain things in the system of cleaner governance or of, you know, the very fact that I still feel like there's such a big difference in India and the West in terms of how you view cops. Like I know, and especially with friends, female friends in Delhi, they're in the West, like, they feel absolutely instantly protected. Here it's questionable kind of a thing. Those are fundamental things where, I mean, people expect them, the ruling government, to sort of step in or make, they say, why is he quiet on this?
Yeah.
I mean, I would, you know, sometimes argue that it's not his job. to comment on every goddamn thing. But there are some, it's such a loose line, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this time, you know, you can say like, why are you quiet now? Like, it's things like that, I feel, like little pockets of nuances, which, but yeah, we'll see.
And in terms of...
this is so different from anything else we've ever done.
Yeah, man, I mean, I'm enjoying it. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
And I think it's refreshing also to kind of, you know, just kind of talk about this in a bit of detail.
Also, we didn't want to talk about downward ticking GDP growth number.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that it's, I think, that's always a topic on agenda. But I think that was pretty much in line with expectation at this stage.
Yeah.
We already had some initial noises, right? I mean, I think RBI had already given a fairly bearish view.
Sure, yeah.
So, and, you know, in terms of when you look at the entire, where do you see technology going wrong here?
Yeah.
One is obviously the question of, you know, making sure that the onus of
credibility, for me, like, quality of information is losing credibility. Maybe we're better in a position to decide what is credible on, that's why we're discovering new age problems. Back in the day, I mean, as it's going to high school, and like, I used to read like one or two newspapers and used to believe what was written. And if you wanted opinions, you go to the op-ed page, you look at opinions or counter arguments, right? But you consumed it with absolute crystal clarity that there is checks, there are checks and balances, it's true. If it says that X party member went and harassed Y party member, beat them up or said something, I would believe that. Now, X says Y, Y says X. Half the journalism points towards X doing Y, half the journalism points towards Y doing X.
Right.
Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is, also there's a narrative. So the ability to believe narratives, I don't know how to solve this. Like, there has to be one master copy, you know? Like, I don't know how to get to that master copy. I'm always like, okay, this is saying, this is saying, and both are very believable.
Yeah.
There, no one is clean here. I mean, everyone.
I think it's a bigger challenge in political reporting, right?
It is.
Because, I mean, it's more subjective there. It's not data-driven.
And the nature of political news is that it can be toxic. It can be so sensitive. It can create so many disturbances, right? So the costs of that are so massive. So I don't know how. I don't have an. I think whoever solves this problem will be the next billionaire.
Are we? Are we also upselling transference proposition as a curated business?
Yeah. We have so many quality. I mean, look, jokes aside, but that's one thing that we've been talking about for 2 years, right? Like quality. Like we have to. We're not going to put anything until we're absolutely clear.
That's the reason why we don't politics. But we don't touch politics.
Exactly.
It's much more challenging to do it there, right?
Yeah, I mean, need people on ground with video, and it's just.
So I mean, if tomorrow. Like a company reports, if a newspaper says the company reports X, Y, and Z numbers, you can actually go to the company's file and verify, right?
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah,
that's what we try to do, and that's why we kind of proactively try to avoid anything besides that.
Yeah.
But
and that's what Twitter was supposed to do, right? It was cutting out the middleman. Like if Mr. Modi had something to say, he would tweet it.
Yeah.
We would hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Or if Wall Street Journal wanted to say something about their, they would do it straight from the Twitter handle. There were supposed to be no middlemen, right?
Yeah.
So if anything, credibility should have gone up.
Yeah.
But then there is so much noise now from UGC as well.
Yeah.
Like it gets muddled up.
And plus, I mean, the influencers now know that they have a direct reach to the audience.
Yeah.
So they actually... they prefer to just go through Twitter rather than actually go through any of the conventional routes of communication.
And then there's paid sponsored tweets and then there's sponsored posts, right? You're paid to sell a particular information.
Yeah.
Be it right, wrong, that's secondary. But the moment you start incentivizing...
And I don't think they have that promoted by a stamp on top, right?
No, they'll put it as, it's as native as one can be.
Yeah.
Like there are people who...
They're paid trolls.
They're paid trolls, right? And they make logical arguments.
Yeah.
But it's just flawed so many times, right? You can't... Everything... There are few things which are zero-sum in nature, right? Like there are some things. Not... I know, I understand that everything can't be zero-sum, but there are few things which are zero-sum.
Yeah.
So anyway,
Well, I think we are almost, up for 50 minutes. And I think this was just a... This was more of a kind of coffee session rather than even a formalized podcast.
Yeah.
We touched upon a lot of things. I'm sure, you know, we can go on for another hour on this.
Yeah.
But this is just to kind of make the point that everybody is thinking about these things. Everyone who has like a, you know, reasonably rational head on themselves ponders very deeply on these issues. It affects a lot of our sensibilities. But the important thing is to also not take everything that you read on face value.
Yeah.
Right? I think, unfortunately, there's an onus on users to verify what they read, look at the historical perspective before they, you know, kind of take very, before anyone makes any rash judgments, because it's just organically very difficult to do that in the current information ecosystem. ecosystem. And we are trying to do that at our end. I hope, you know, everyone kind of tries to, you know, follow that in principle also.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to, am I sounding too preachy now?
It's okay sometimes to sound preachy. Because, yeah. There's nothing wrong. I'm very proud
of
you.
Who am I to know? Yeah. That's the bigger question.
Yeah.
I'm expecting a comment. Who are you to tell us that?
Huh? I'm sure people will say that, yeah. But no, I mean, yeah, we have this thing. I mean, we just decided to put a mic in between our general conversation today.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's something that's been gripped.
Is this going to be a regular thing? Is this like, do you envisage a new series?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree with you. And yeah, this is like a one-off. I mean, we are following the principle of marginal utility. You know, you can't do this very often. Then it loses all its value. So we'll do it one-off.
Yeah. This time it warranted.
This time it warranted. Yeah. So we'll wait for the next big elephant. Yeah. You know, and then we can kind of, you know, touch upon it again.
Yeah.
Maybe. Cool, guys. It was, I think, fun chatting up, Sharad.
Yeah, likewise.
I wish everyone the best of the week, and we'll see you guys soon. This is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran
signing off.